Hey, it's Bert from The Used. You're listening to Sound Sessions.
All right, so welcome to another episode of Sound Sessions. Today we're at the House of Blues, joined by a true kick-ass rock artist. We're just listening to the gentle drumming here at the House of Blues by the band The Used, and we're here with Bert McCracken.
Hi.
Bert, what's going on, man? How you been?
Good, I'm good. Trying to keep it quiet in here.
I appreciate that. So you're playing two sold-out nights here at Chicago's House of Blues. It's their 15th year anniversary. Two nights, two albums, cities all over the country. You know, what made you choose the self-titled album and In Love and Death for this tour?
Well, we missed the 10-year, and 11 years sounds kind of silly. Mm-hmm. These two records mean a lot to us and to a lot of people, and we've really seen that on this tour. And a lot of these songs we don't regularly play, if ever. So getting to do the full records in their entirety is a really special and meaningful occasion. I think it was worth it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So is there a little bit of rust on the shelves? Are you guys just kind of going right back into it?
No, I mean, it's 50% a different band, so it's really what The Used is nowadays, mm-hmm. and I think that the music has kind of transcended this teenage angst and kind of what it... The music is really about kind of how our mistakes kind of define us and have brought us to where we are and what kind of people we are today, and freedom is kind of a big subject, but... To me, a lot of these songs are about what it means, what it takes.
What are the differences and growth you've seen in yourself and in the band since the first album?
Well, the music has kind of, like I said, the meanings kind of become more about our lives today, and that's really nice. But I think in the 15 years we've been on tour and played hundreds and hundreds of shows. Mm-hmm. We get to know each other in a really, really specific type of way. We really know how each individual person works and ticks and kind of that sort of thing. But also, I think that you do something long enough and with a true passion for it, you become better at it and you kind of realize what it is all about. And this music, especially these first two records, are about the hardcore Used fans who mm-hmm. have continued this ride for us. Like, we've always all four of us have dreamed. This has been our dream since we were little, and to be able to do it for more than 15 years, and to kind of feel the true emotion of the night in the room, it's humbling. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, growing up and being so infatuated with this music thing and getting to do it as a career, and not only that, influence people with your music, must just be an astonishing thing to be a part of.
Absolutely, and music is a powerful thing. We hear it a lot that this music has maybe saved a lot of people's lives, and we that's our story we share. These first two records have saved my life over and over, so... It's a powerful thing.
Well, let's speak a little bit about that then. You know, a portion of the packages sold to are going to the Living the Dream Foundation that you're in partnership with. Now, how did this partnership come to be?
We've known Scotty, who kind of runs the whole thing. We've known him for a long time, and it's an awesome cause. If you don't know about it, check out Living the Dream. They help kind of bring sick kids out to rock shows, and we get to hang out and kind of have this really, really magical day for people and us. It's incredibly inspiring. So, but where we're at as far as music mixed with business is a really, really tough thing. And, mm-hmm. and if you know a little bit about the music industry, you know that it's always been big pockets taking as much money as they possibly can from the artists. And in our heart of hearts, we wish we could that this was all for free and that everything we make music so people can listen to it, and we encourage people to steal our music. And it's not about, we're not out here because we want to be millionaires. If you want to be a millionaire, you should get into crooked finance and law and stuff like that.
So being around for as long as you've been, You've seen a lot of ups and downs in the music industry over the last few years. What has been the difference between when you first put out the self-titled album to the latest album? I mean, what changes have you gone through? I'm sure a lot of them have been growing pains rather than really things that you want to be a part of at times.
Yeah, the way that the music industry has changed, and record labels no longer really have the same place they once had as banks for bands, and there's not that kind of money in music anymore because of streaming services and this kind of thing. And so we've been kind of taking a look at the industry as it is and finding ways to inform people about how it works, which is the beginning of the end of the big business of music, I think. Because once people find out that when they buy our music from iTunes steals from us. When they listen to our music on Spotify steals from us. Mm-hmm. But at this point, just to put our music out there in every way possible, I think, is almost better than withholding music from people who don't yet have the information. But it should all be on a more non-profit and donation basis. We've seen that coming for a long time, but I think we'll see major changes in how music works and how people put out records. And I think full records are now becoming as important as they were, and the whole shift of kind of like, we want to support the band for what it's worth. Like, I want to buy music straight from the band and not from some millionaire guy who works for some other billionaire guy, you know. So that's how it is so much in life, that we want to try to avoid that at all costs. But for now, it's just about making music, and music that we like, and hopefully that other people would like as well.
Absolutely. Right. Do you ever see yourself going on like a Louis C.K. kind of like expansion, where you're, you know, cut out Ticketmaster completely and they buy straight from the band the tickets, maybe some smaller venues?
I think it would be awesome. I just think that for where we're at, everything is so, there's so many people willing to play the game that you kind of get lost in the mix, especially for younger bands coming up. As far as the used, we you're exactly right. We have high hopes of eliminating all the kind of anyone who's not part of the direct production of the music on the live music on the road, or making the music, recording the music, shouldn't really be making the majority of the money. I think everybody would agree with that. So any way we can, it's going to take a lot of people on board to kind of really get a movement going, and that's what movements are about, I suppose.
And you would be the band that started. I mean, that'd be a really cool aspect to your career, I'm sure.
It will be cool. Time can only tell.
So I wanted to kind of go back to the beginning a little bit. You and I have a little bit of a connection. I spent most of my formative years going through college and everything out in Utah. I lived in Cedar City for a few years.
Right on.
A lot of my best friends are from Orem and Provo as well. But I know firsthand the fact that, you know, in contrast to New York and Chicago, there aren't a lot of great music venues that I can go and check out, or even a lot of great... There's more so now, but record stores weren't really existent, especially maybe back when you were growing up and everything. So
right.
What was the influence that you found from living in Utah and then, you know, becoming a rock star?
Well, Salt Lake always had a kind of a decent scene. So for us, it was like a 45-minute drive away, and there was usually like two or three shows a week if you could make it up, and luckily there was a little record shop by us that still kind of would let you open up a new CD and listen to it before you bought it and stuff. So I had a big group of friends growing up who were all kind of outcasts, misfit kind of kids, didn't get along with maybe hardly anyone, and music was our thing. Seeing it come full circle, the internet is a huge place where people live, and like, there's a real, real world happening all around us, and there's still so many ways to discover new things. And I think that the best ways we can is still from friends and from like word of mouth and experiences are way more than what we read on a message board or what we think we read on somebody's opinion or on some book or tweet or something. So rambling on and on about it, but still, I think that where we're at right now, there's a lot more access to good music as well. So it's a really double-edged sword.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember, like, the first moment or the first record you grabbed and you're like, holy shit, this is what I have to do with the rest of my life?
Well, growing up, it was actual records. My dad had tons and tons of records, and, like, Jackson 5 early on was some of Michael Jackson's maybe the reason why I do what I do. Hearing him sing, and then when I saw him on MTV dancing and singing, I was like, look at all the people smiling, and why wouldn't everybody want to do that?
Right.
Yeah, so from then on, it's all over the place, though. I loved tons of good rock music, but I also loved lots of pop music. In Utah, it's not super easy to listen to heavy music when your parents think it's satanic or whatever it is. So there's a lot of Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey and Janet Jackson in my childhood, which is cool.
Yeah.
All very great singers.
You hide the Dead Kennedy albums.
Yeah, my mom threw away Incesticide like 4 times, I think, but it happens.
It's
that's the record that taught me about harmonies, too, so...
Yeah.
Little did she know.
Yeah. Man, it's funny how, you know, being a musician, you kind of gather these little kernels from everywhere in your life that kind of inspire you. On that note, you know, there's some cool, obvious changes in your music over the years, especially from the production levels from, like, In Love and Death to Lies and the Liars that I noticed when I first picked up that album a few years ago. So when you're going into this songwriting process, when you're going into the studio, do you have a certain point of view, or does it change with, like, the tides? Like, you're like, oh, I you hear, like, an electronic beat, and you're like, that's the new version of the song. Like, where does that come from?
Yeah, sometimes approaching a record, you have, from Lies to the Liars, I think before that record, we all talked about making a serious, theatrical, big, and epic-sounding record, very kind of Danny Elfman at moments, and as digital as we wanted to be without kind of losing something in the process. But other records, it's been an approach of just this kind of record is going to be exactly what the moment feels like. I know for Imaginary Enemy, the record was for me more maybe about the message behind the record than the actual songs and how the song sounded. So I didn't really spend a lot of time concerning myself with the actual sound of the record. It was more about lyrical content and the how it felt.
So. Nice. I mean, it's such a process, you know, when you're writing these things. Where do you get your influence from writing these days? I mean, I know that a lot of it comes from maybe your daughter and you know, just living on the road and everything. Is that where does it come from these days?
Yeah, we have a lot of serious discussions on the bus now, unlike the past, and I think everybody's into their own kind of... I love Democracy Now!, I love Amy Goodman, I think she's... I think Democracy Now!, as far as true information goes, it's what news should be, and I get a lot of inspiration in kind of trying to understand how the world works and what I could be doing to kind of help somebody else's situation. It might seem so far-fetched and far removed from my life, but it's actually not. Inspiration comes from everywhere. I read a lot. We watch a lot of movies. We live regular life. So yeah, it's where does it? That's the magic question. Where does it ever come from?
Right. So what does Bert do to unwind when he's on the road too? What are some good books that you've been reading lately?
I read Jane Mayer's Dark Money, and it's kind of about how it's like the rise of this kind of radical right. It's this kind of neoconservative, anarcho-capitalist who wants the whole world deregulated and do away with environmental protection altogether, and just to make more money from coal and gas. It's about the Koch brothers almost entirely.
I was going to say,
but there's a few other real sinister, infamous characters that we should thank for themes like if everyone had a gun, then everyone would be safe from guns. These are all the same people that sold these really awful ideas to the world. And the way they did it is crazy, too, by planting, like, beachheads and institutions inside of, like, Ivy League schools to reteach law, reteach economics, and dismantle the world in their favor. It's pretty wild.
Whoa.
It's a light reading. It's kind of a rom-com.
That's what it sounds like. Man, to unwind, you just read about the world unwinding. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good way to put it. Noam Chomsky is one of my heroes. Oh, yeah. Anything he writes, I think, is amazing. He just had a new book that just came out, so excited to read that.
Very cool, man. So, it's been, you know, I mentioned this before. I'm probably going to mention it again. 15 years. It's astonishing. What's the difference between the type of fans that are coming to see you now as opposed to, you know, back in the day when you're getting started?
Well, there's this kind of something cool about discovering a band for the first time. And when I think people first saw us, it was like, wow, this wild, crazy band. And he's maybe talking from his heart. And I think that kind of stuck. The fact that we love music and we do it sincerely is kind of a standalone. I've seen a lot of bands come and go, and I think that there's been a lot of different emphasis in the wrong places on what's important and what's not when it's about songs and the fans, because that's what it's all about. But also, I think that well, yeah, that's a pretty good answer.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I was like, where is he gonna go with this now? So what kind of messages are they telling you now? Are they like, you know, Bert, you changed my life with your music? I mean, are you still getting a lot of those?
Yeah, of course. We get the impact that these records have made. And I'm sure, like, in the bigger spectrum, there's a lot of bands in people's lives that have this kind of impact. And we're happy to be a small part in a bigger, more beautiful thing that is music that does save lives. And it's done the same thing for us. Like I mentioned before, like, we share that story, and this is kind of, these two records, we kind of grew up, like a lot of our fans did, we kind of grew up with this music, so it's really cool to be back at it and feel what it feels like in all of its triumphant glory. We've all kind of recovered from what we were serious about back then, and, you know, it's kind of a celebration, not only 15 years, but, like, we all made it through all right, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you're about to go on stage, you're playing a sold-out show here at the House of Blues. Do you have any pre-show rituals?
Just we warm up together, we all kind of hang out together, and then we hug each other, we tell each other we love each other. That's a real thing. And however silly it sounds, I think it helps to hear it and get a hug. It really does.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the positive vibes put you in a really good spot, especially when you're making music.
This is a really, really bunch of positive guys, and that's kind of what it takes to stay on the road. It's not as easy as it might sound from the other side, but yeah.
I can appreciate that.
But it really is for all the hardcore fans. This is a dream come true. They've made it possible.
Absolutely. So we're here in Chicago. Are there any must-do things while you're here in the city? Do you have any favorite memories of Chicago?
No. I have a lot of good friends here that I'm really looking forward to seeing. A really good buddy of ours is traveling quite a ways to come visit us. So. Yeah, cities are cities, man, but Chicago fans are very intense. The last show we played here, unfortunately, somebody passed away at the show. It was really quite a insane experience. It was like, I don't know if that's ever happened at a U show, but it was during the Chevelle part of the show, and really crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. Well, you know,
I
wanted to end it on a little bit of a positive note, but, you know, we are happy that you're here. We everyone here in Chicago really enjoys your band. I mean, I myself am a big fan, so we can't thank you enough, and thanks for coming to Chicago and playing two sold-out shows here tonight.
Thank you, and all the hardcore fans who've been here, they know who they are. Thank you as well. Thanks.
Can't get enough of Sound Sessions? Like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter @SoundSeshPod, and check us out on Instagram @SoundSessionsWGN.